favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
I mean, still, that's a great place to kick it off for.
Yeah, okay, not bad. All right.
Okay.
All right, well. On that note, let's ice skate uphill into the next episode, shall
okay,
we?
Okay, yeah, so let's not get ahead of ourselves here. We still got a whole fucking season plot out, so yay!
All right, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to the Horrible Peoples Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is the remote Anthony Fuentes.
Yep, I'm a fucking daywalker, baby.
And the remote Phil Acevedo.
I have all of their strengths, but none of their weaknesses.
Except for the thirst.
Because I am a thirsty motherfucker.
I was going to say, thirsty motherfucker.
And we'd all rather not be cattle, you know?
Fucking
Norman
man.
Reedus. Oh, man.
I am so excited to cover this movie.
Same.
The first installment of this franchise was Phil's very first episode on the podcast.
That's true. That's the day you guys met.
That was the day, you know, for you know, the day that I graced this podcast with my presence, you know, for Webster, it was the greatest day, most important day of her life. But for me, it was a Tuesday, baby.
Okay.
Like, this man's going to change your life, but also I'm opening a whole can of worms here. I'm sorry.
I know. Not only did I meet one of my best friends, but I also lost something. My
what?
Dignity.
Oh! I was like, wait, what? Where are you going with this?
A real monkey's paw right there, to be honest.
Oh my god. That's hilarious.
All right, let's just dive right in, guys. We are talking about Blade 2. From what year did this movie come out, Anthony?
2002.
2002.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's kick it off with Fuenster.
Yep, I'm gonna do it. All right, hey, IMDb is gonna tell us about this movie. According to them, Blade forms an uneasy alliance with the Vampire Council in order to combat the Reapers who are feeding on vampires.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one kind of sucks. I'm not sure if I really like this synopsis.
No, it's not good.
No, yeah. I don't like it.
It's like the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And then they just put a little sentence that everybody betrays each other and then are cool and they betray each other again because it is an anime. So this was written by one of the, like, back and forth, you never know if he's good or if he's bad. Mm-hmm. Boys, David S. Goyer. He's an interesting fella. Mm-hmm. And, of course, directed by the incredibly consistent, almost never bad, Sans Crimson Peak, Guillermo del Toro.
I knew you were going to say something about Crimson Peak.
Oh,
my God. Fuck you. Crimson Peak is incredible. Your opinions are wrong, and you should go talk to a wall about it.
It's not the, not necessarily, I wouldn't call it the peak of his creativity for sure.
I would say it's his weakest. I would say it's his weakest film.
What are you guys talking about?
I can confidently say that's his weakest film. I liked it, but it's like, yeah, it's like super forgettable for me.
What the fuck?
I'm so glad. Oh, if only we had Phil there at the time.
Yeah, I love Del Toro as much as everybody, but Crimson Peak is,
crack are you guys smoking?
Where would you hold it? You know, we'll come back to this later.
Ranking
Del Toro flicks.
I know, right? So early on.
Yeah.
It's getting too hot. This is starring Wesley Snipes. Oh, the fucking guy. And it also has Chris Christopherson, Ron Perlman. Oh, fucking A. Lenore Varela? Mm-hmm. Varela? Fucking Daryl Dixon himself, Norman Reedus, and Luke Goss. So,
I just found out. I just found out that Norman Reedus, they're doing like a spin-off show for The Walking Dead with him. What's his name? Daryl?
Like in France or something?
I saw the poster for it on the way to work, and I was like, oh, they're doing a spin-off to this. I mean, I tuned out with this show from a long time ago, but I do remember Daryl Dixon, and I was like, oh, so he's getting his own show now.
See,
okay, cool.
Daryl and Carol,
I remember
were cool.
him from the Edgelord classic Boondock Saints.
Yeah, Boondock Saints.
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Boondock Saints and this one, in this movie, Blade 2, were like my introduction to Norman Reedus for sure.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's kind of this least badass character for sure. this was actually given a pretty sizable $54 million budget and made some goddamn money. $155 million at the box office. Mm-hmm. So, all right,
Blade. This is actually the highest grossing Blade movie in the trilogy.
Damn. I mean,
it's pretty fucking good.
Yeah. I agree. Again, it's a fucking anime, dude, I'm telling you. But we'll get to it.
We'll get to that, trust. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. Webster, you wanna steer the wheel here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead and read that out, please.
Hell yeah, dude. Blade 2.
Beautiful.
Oh,
yeah. Thank you.
God damn it. Hell yeah, dude.
Sequel.
Cool. Okay, so we find Blade in the Czech Republic as he travels around Prague in search of his boy and mentor, Whistler. You see, kids, in the first Blade movie, we were led to believe that Whistler died due to killing himself after a vicious attack by the one and only Deacon Frost. But instead of dying, Whistler was turned into a vampire and was held prisoner for two years.
So convenient.
I know.
Thank you for filling us in. Blade 1, that's the synopsis right there.
Literally, in the beginning of Blade 2, there's that voiceover by Blade that's just like, here's what you missed.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, dude.
I always thought that was cool. I kind of dig it. I look back now and I was like, it might have been a little weird, bold choice. But I dig it.
It was definitely like a previously on Blade. Like, shit, okay.
Exactly, because it's an anime. It's an anime.
And it retconned. It retconned immediately. I'm like, oh my god, I've seen, what arc is this?
Yep. It had a very anime opening, too.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man. This fucking movie, I was watching it, I'm like, holy shit.
Back
the techno.
Oh, yeah. So, back in Prague, Blade finds where Whistler is being held, and he chases off and kills off the vampires holding Whistler. One vampire luckily escapes Blade, but we'll get to him later.
That was a funny one.
That was so fucking funny. So, Blade rescues Whistler and finds a way to cure him of his vampireness. It's a little vague on the details.
Super some might say it's a little forced, but it's super vague. Like, what did he inject him with? Like, okay,
and so also if you did that, why don't you do it for everyone? Doesn't make sense.
Exactly,
this is like definitely one of those what do you call them, the pitch meeting ones. Like, it's barely an inconvenience.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Is it going to be difficult for Blade to cure Whistler of his vampireness? Actually, it's going to be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Yes.
Oh, fuck yeah, that's good. So, it is here that Whistler meets Scud, a.k.a. Josh, a.k.a. Scud, the pot-smoking and Powerpuff Girl fanboy who has been helping Blade in his missions.
Oh, look at the random new character, Norman Reedus, baby.
Yeah. If you notice, when he's tuning in, he watches a lot of Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, I did notice.
Yeah.
Trust, I did notice that.
I thought that was always cool.
Sorry, I lost my spot.
Doing, like, technical mechanic shit while watching some good old Powerpuff Girls.
Hey, don't we all?
Yeah.
So, two vampires break into their hideout. Blade, Whistler, and Scud prepare for an assault, but the two vampires are actually there just to deliver a message from the greater body of the vampire nation, and they would like to form an alliance.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So the vampires are like, yo, man, we want to be cool with you. All right.
I love how it's like a total misunderstanding. It's like, oh, hold on a second. Did you have to fucking. We could have talked this out.
Yeah, they had a whole fight scene in order to actually communicate. But yeah, they came
again,
in with.
Again, anime as fuck straight up.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I said, we did get a little sneak preview of the villain before this, right?
Yes, in the beginning, we did.
The intro is like him trying to like donate blood, and they're just like, your blood is special, and he's just like, oh, is it? And then like just kills everyone.
He looks into the
camera.
He
looks into this video surveillance camera. And he goes, vampires. I fucking hate vampires, or something like that. So that's pretty much
You didn't miss much.
Yeah. We'll get to him in a little bit.
Yes. After Blade, Whistler, and Scud take a field trip to Vampire Nation HQ, they are welcomed by Eli Damaskinos. Reveals that there is a new breed of vampires roaming the streets, and they're called Reapers. These Reapers are primal mutant creatures with an insane thirst of blood, And basically, they're like mutated Nosferatu-looking, like crackhead vampires who are not only killing humans but also vampires. These Reapers are led by a young Reaper named Jared Nomak.
Mm-hmm. Damn. So what happened is they actually killed all the vegetarian vampires, and then they got their powers, and this is what happened.
I just love that they're like, we were fine with this guy, and then he started killing vampires. He's gotta fucking go. <Yeah. laughs>
I like that.
He's like got this whole crew in Seattle. Fucking Washington vampires just done.
Portland guys are next.
Meanwhile, in Twilight, supermassive black hole starts playing in the distance.
That's a Reaper's next target right there.
They're playing baseball. The fucking Reapers roll up in there like, oh, that guy's... You guys are trying to play ball or what's going on over here?
Oh, God.
Oh, that's good.
So Demaskinos offers Blade a chance to lead an elite group of vampires who call themselves the Blood Pack to hunt down Nomak and the Reapers. Blade cautiously agrees to this idea and brings Whistler and Scud with him.
Not to be confused with the NWO Wolfpack, which
the Wolfpack
destroyed this movie and it'd be done in half an hour, dude.
The Wolfpack's logo is also in red with like blood drips to it and everything. I thought it was pretty cool.
They're like Reapers, fucking please.
And then also keep in mind this Blood Pack was trained for like 2 years to train to kill Blade, to hunt and kill Blade, but instead they're being switched to a different direction. Now they're going a different direction.
I know, now it's like, okay, this person you've been training to fucking kill for the last 2 years, actually he's your boss now.
Yeah. He's gonna lead you guys into something else. So there's been a change in direction.
So fucked. That's so corporate too. Like that is the most corporate thing on the planet. Where it's just like, hey, listen, I know this huge project you've been working on for the last 3 months. We're actually going in a different direction, so we're gonna scrap that, and you're gonna start over.
The marketing guys for the Vampire HQ, Vampire Nation HQ. I imagine they're like, hey, we love the video, but we got some minor tweaks that we want to add. Can we change the song and
everything else about it?
Can you actually? Can you just get the plan you wrote for Blade, right? And just white out Blade and just put Reaper right where it's at. Yeah. And I think that's a good starting base, and you can work from there.
God damn it!
Man. So
enjoy the corporate marketing humor from all three of us.
Oh, thank you. That's what we're here for. I mean, I think it's our civic duty to have a little corporate marketing.
To inform everyone what a hellscape it is. Yeah.
All right, Fwinster, lead us into this part of the story, please.
Oh, I against I. Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, but before Blade, Whistler and Scud go on this Reaper hunting voyage. Fantastic voyage. Uh-huh. Blade wants to get affiliated with his so-called Blood Pack, which I'm just playing the NW Wolf Pack in my every time I read that. The theme song is popping in my head. Anyways, Blade had already met Asad and Nissa, who is the daughter of Demaskinos.
The old fuck.
Yeah, the old dude.
Oh, yeah. But let's meet the rest of the gang. The Blood Pack consists of Reinhardt, Mr. Ron fucking Perlman, Chupa, played by Vince in The Fast and the Furious. Vince?
I fucking knew it was him! I fucking knew it! Wow. I totally... Yep. Okay, so again, I had just gotten a tattoo before I watched this movie, so I was like coming down off the fresh tattoo high, and I was like half asleep, and I was just like, is that Vince from the first Fast and the Furious movie? And I meant to look it up, and I didn't. Thank you so much for including that. Yeah. I feel like, fucking vindicated.
Why am I making a tuna sandwich right now?
Dude, honestly, I don't even know that actor's name, but we just all know him as Vince from the Fast and the Furious. So I was like, yo, try Fatburger from now on.
It's because the Buster saved me from the Reapers.
Blade's like, he knows I can box, and he points at Vince.
God damn.
Oh, keep it going
before we recite the Fast and the Furious in any chance.
It's literally Rush Hour and Fast and the Furious. If we have one break, we're going to dive into it. Or any DX-based promos. Verlaine and her lover, Lighthammer, very cool name. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Snowman. Played by Donnie Mullovin Yen, who is criminally left with such little screen time. I agree.
Donnie Yen, this is a young, in his prime, Donnie Yen. At the time, when I was a kid, I didn't know who Donnie Yen was. But, like, you know, growing up now, you know, as an adult, I'm like, oh shit, that's Donnie Yen. I was like, oh fuck, the dude's fucking incredible in like the John Wick films, and he's like, he just came out in John Wick 4, and he was fucking incredible in John Wick 4. And then I was like, and then I'm watching Blade 2, and I'm like, oh shit, that's Donnie Yen, but that's the dude that has like very little screen time, and he gets, you know, murked later on, and I was like, oh, that was criminal.
That, not a full utilization of him, of course, now I know, but man, this solid Del Toro casting.
Well, I mean, it has fucking Ron Perlman in it, so it's it's pretty much...
That's his De Niro, or DiCaprio.
They're for real, right?
Yep.
But it's here where Ron Perlman tries to make Blade, quote-unquote, blush, and starts antagonizing him, only for Blade to disarm him and plant an explosive on his head in order to keep his ass in check, which was always a great scene. So after Blade establishes himself as the alpha of the group, he asks Nissa... where should the Blood Pack start searching for some goddamn Reapers? And this is where Nissa suggests, of course, the Vampire Nightclub. Come on. We gotta have one of these scenes.
Come on.
The House of Pain. Ooh. Wow. So innocuous.
Yep.
So this is where we get this really awesome slow-mo group shot of Blade and the Wolfpack walking towards the entrance of the nightclub to Massive Attack featuring Mos Def's Eye Against Eye. Phil, note that song fucks.
Yes, it does. That's that, all right. So when it comes to Blade films, I think fans and like overall general fans of the series knows that, you know, Confusion, the techno song from the first Blade movie, is the song that's like that you know illustrates Blade, right?
Yeah.
The second song that does that has to be Eye Against Eye. If you guys don't know this song is like it's like a clear like representation of what this movie's about. It's Mos Def and Mass Attack just fucking it's a sick ass song to wake up to in the morning. I suggest it, check it out sometime if you never heard it. It's a sick ass song and it gets played beautifully in the slow motion shot, and it gets played at the end credits, at the very end credits.
It like does.
Dude, I love that song. Truly fucks song. I really do. And we're going to talk in our next episode. We're going to go through another movie that has a great musical little interlude like that. But what do you call it? Like, it's just when directors do this, like when they nail it, they fucking nail it. Mm-hmm. And this one does it for sure.
Yep.
Good old Del Toro. I forget it's Del Toro sometimes. I'm like, damn, I haven't seen him do one of those kind of scenes before.
That's the boy GDT.
I mean, there's also Hellboy. Like he's done.
Oh, that's a good point. Good point. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which I'll bring up later when we start ranking movies.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sounds good. I cannot wait for this conversation. Oh, that's
all right. It's a Del Toro movie. That's true. So, Lighthammer finds a Reaper in the
At the House of Pain.
Oh, my bad. At the House of Pain, Blade and the gang roam the vampire nightclub where we see some gruesome imagery of some good old sadomasochism, baby. But no Reapers to be found just yet.
I love that Vampire's version of sadomasochism is just like, hey, just fucking cut my back open, dude.
Yeah, like, that shit was insane. I was like, oh, that girl's back is and muscles and veins and everything and are all being exposed.
They're like, oh, is that a lump back there? You should get that checked out, man.
This is the place where, like, Pinhead and his crew would be like, yo, we gotta go to the House of Pain, man.
It is called the House of Pain. So.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, what is this children shit over here? Lighthammer finds a Reaper in the nightclub's kitchen and starts battling it out. And Nissa finds none other than the Reaper leader himself, Nomak. Which, again, he's actually a really good villain. I dig him.
I dig him.
I don't know what it is.
I dig Nomak. Not as cool as and personal as Deacon Frost, but we'll talk more about that later.
But outside the nightclub, Scud holds surveillance in his van while Whistler holds his post on the rooftop, watching everyone's back. Scud is under attack by a group of Reapers, but Whistler is nowhere to be found. Anime allegiances are
I love their fucking immediate animosity towards each other.
I like the scene where Scud's like, the fuck is your problem, Pappy?
Pappy!
And then Whistler's like, who the fuck are you calling Pappy?
He's like, I started this operation, you ass wipe.
Jesus. Blade finds that Nissa is being held hostage by Nomak, while Priest gets brutally attacked by a Reaper, eventually getting bit by one.
No.
Right in the head, too.
Yeah. Oof. Chupa unloads a bunch of firepower on a Reaper, while Snowman has a very cool hand-to-hand fight scene with the Reaper, as Donnie Yen damn well fucking should.
Yeah.
Now, of course, Nomak tries to recruit Blade into his cause, citing that they both hate vampires. He asks Blade, is the enemy of my enemy my friend, or my enemy? This is where Blade and Nomak have a badass fight scene, but because of daylight now approaching, Nomak and his Reapers retreat to their secret hideout.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, this is a pretty good fight scene, though.
That was a badass fight scene. It was like I don't know how, like, the settings change in this scene. We go from, like, a nightclub to a hallway to, like, a church or under construction or something.
Yeah.
It was like a warehouse
building, but then also it's just like, hey, we built this over, like, a dilapidated church.
Some kind of temple. Or something, whatever it is.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it also kind of feels like the Ninja Turtle sewers for some reason parts of it, too. I don't know. Yeah. There's something weird going on here.
Might have been the same set.
I know, right? I don't know, but I like how this whole scene feels like it could be the climax to the movie, but there's still, like, a lot of movie left. It gets weird. It's like almost final battle feeling for sure.
Yeah.
But of course, after everyone regroups, Nisa realizes Priest and his wounds. Nisa realizes Priest and his wounds. Goddamn.
Dude.
I'm running
English
back. I'm going to do it again. Going up top. Oh, yeah. After everyone regroups, Nisa analyzes Priest and his wounds. After Priest dies, Wilson reveals that he found the Reaper nest in the city sewers.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Reapers.
That's good. I like that.
That's nice.
So that's why Whistler left his post, because he went to go follow these Reapers, and that's where he found the nest.
Allegedly.
These guys are headed.
Allegedly.
Yeah. He did the Toucan Sam thing. He's like, follow your nose.
Jesus Christ. All right, you guys got it from here. I'm going to just go.
It's like, oh, Scud was under attack. It's like, he can handle himself. Fuck that kid.
That should be a convenience if you take him out. It'd just be nice for me.
Right. All right, so I guess it's my turn here. So here's my little tagline. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Thanks, Phil.
All right. Oh, thank you. So here's where I go with, after Scud and Whistler provide UV light weapons for the team, Blade and the gang make their way into the sewers to hunt some fucking Reapers. And of course, the team spreads out, and this is where Lighthammer turns into a Reaper himself and kills Snowman. R.I.P. to the boy.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
R.I.P. to the boy, even though he was killed off screen.
Boo.
Donnie Yen.
Mm-hmm. Fucking Lighthammer does the classic zombie movie move where he gets bit and someone's like, did you get bit? And he's like, no, I'm fine. And it's just like conspicuously covers up a very obvious bite mark on his neck. Like, I'm like, great, cool.
I was like,
cool,
bro, you totally got murked. And then he turns into a Reaper. And then I like when his woman shoots him. And then his voice goes, like, all dark, like, vroom. Like, I was like, oh, fuck, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. But Lighthammer has a sick-ass, like, beard tattoo. I don't even know what to say.
That is a Maori tattoo. So it's, like, what the indigenous people of New Zealand, like, it's, like, their kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a badass tattoo. I always thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of people from New Zealand, like, indigenous people from New Zealand get them. It's, like, you know, a cultural thing.
Sick. Oh, nice. And I always thought his weapon was pretty badass. It was like a big ass hammer, but then, like, you push a button and, like, a spike, like, pops out.
That's fucking sick.
Yeah. So, Lighthammer's already turned into a freaking Reaper, and this is where he chases his lover, Verlaine, where she climbs up the sewer ladder and opens the lid, letting the sunlight kill them both. That's pretty romantic. It's cute.
It's kind of, I mean,
You know.
In an ideal world, everyone lives, but in this case, I suppose. It's very Romeo out, and Juliet.
Right? Yeah. Meanwhile, after Chupa and Whistler have a confrontation, a group of Reapers appear, and they take out Chupa, while Whistler makes a run for it.
Not Chupa.
Yeah.
Fucking Chupa.
Rest in peace, Vince from The Fast and the Furious. You were a cool dude. Assad and Nisa are ambushed by a group of Reapers. Assad is unfortunately murked. He's killed. He's dead. Gone. No longer with us. Blade saves Nisa, and he detonates the UV bomb that kills all the Reapers, except, of course, Nomak.
Oh, he can't be that easy to kill. Heaven forbid.
right? Nissan. Oh my god, Nissan.
Nissan.
Oh my god, Nissan 240SX. Oh, dude, that's
this
hilarious.
Is Labor Day weekend.
Apply now for zero markdown. Oh,
it's like you haven't seen my Ultima power yet.
Wow. Oh my god, Nisa and Reinhard survived the blast, but Nisa is heavily injured. Blade allows Nisa to drink some of his own blood so that she can survive. They got a little something going on. Those
I was
two.
Gonna say, and then yeah. and then some romantic music starts yeah. playing. It's they, very erotic.
Yeah, Blade mm-hmm. is showing some something there for Nisa, but you know, we'll
not
get
Nissan.
To that. Yeah, not Nissan. Yeah, mm-hmm. but we'll get there. And of course, to no one's surprise, Demaskinos is his forces arrive, and they eventually betray Blade, Scud, and Whistler. Back at the Vampire Nation HQ, it is revealed that Jared Nomak is actually the son of Demaskinos, and that the Reapers are a result of failed efforts in engineering a stronger, pretty much invincible breed of vampires.
Kel surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? So they all show up, they betray Blade, and Reinhard even gets like a little fucking like kick to the face on Blade. And then, so, everything's going pretty bad, right? But to make things even worse, Scud reveals that he is actually, in fact, one of Demaskinos' familiars. Oh, what a fucking damn. Asshole. But Blade is, of course, 10 steps ahead of Scud as he blows up Scud with the explosive device that was planted on Reinhard.
Honestly, so we didn't talk about the explosive being planted on Reinhard, but it was so fucking mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah. It was planted on him, but it was then removed because like Scud's like, "Oh, it's all right, dude. It's a dud." And mm-hmm. then Blade's like, "Actually, it's not a dud." And he blows him up.
Hell yeah.
Dude, this whole sequence cool. of events and twists was like mm-hmm. this is probably the most anime part right there.
Yeah, like, plot twist after plot twist.
Top
yeah.
10 anime betrayals for sure.
Yeah. I'm yeah. like, it's just non-fucking stop. Holy shit.
Yep. And Blade may seem like he has the upper hand, but unfortunately, Demaskinos takes Blade into a laboratory with efforts in harvesting his blood so that he can develop an immunity to sunlight for his invincible breed of vampires.
Remember, none of the weaknesses, all of the benefits.
Yep, yep. And I thought it was a pretty gnarly fucking table, too. They put him on this laboratory table, and the spikes, like, just cut, like, through his mm-hmm. skin. Mm-hmm. And, like, they just start draining his blood out. Kind of like in the first movie, right?
Good set design, really.
Like, yeah, yeah. Demaskinos' scientists and medical staff or whatever nearly drain all of Blade's blood, leaving him nearly lifeless on the lab table. And just when all hope is lost, Whistler finds a way to escape from where he was being held. The boy's coming through, it yep. seems. He sneaks into the lab where they are holding Blade and frees a nearly dead Blade.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah,
so he's earned his retcon, baby.
Yeah, he's coming back. He's coming back full force, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like how, like, I didn't put it in the script, but, like, the way he snuck in there is that he beat up Reinhard, and then he went through the vents. And then through the vents, he shot up the vampire lawyer. Like, he fucking unloaded on him. Like, all his blood squibs on the lawyer. It was pretty gnarly. But Blade and Whistler try to make their escape. But suddenly, Reinhard stands in their way. Reinhard shoots Blade, making him fall into a blood pool.
God, this scene is so
this
fucking badass.
This scene is so awesome. Yeah. Yep, yep. This blood pool restores Blade's energy. Like, can you imagine Reinhard's like, fuck yeah, I just shot Blade, but oh, fuck, he just fell into the blood pool. I was like, god damn it, he's going to drink all the blood in there. Damn it.
Just fell 3 feet to the left, yep. Holy shit.
Yeah, he could have just, like, fell on the fucking floor. Nope, he had to fall in a goddamn pool made of blood. And it's, like, good blood, too. I think this is, like, the same pool that Demaskinos went in there earlier in the movie and shit to rejuvenate himself or whatever.
Yeah.
Or some shit.
He's yeah. got the best fucking blood.
So he's got some good fucking blood. It's not just regular water.
The finest blood available.
Yeah. Yep. So, of course, so Blade's, you know, energy is fully restored, and Reinhard sends some, and it's, oh, And then so, like, he's fully restored, coming back, right? This blood pool restores Blade's energy and rises from the blood pool in the most badass way fucking possible, dude. I fucking love that shot. Like, I don't even think Wesley Snipes blinks his eyes as he's raising up. Like, if I remember being a kid, I'd be like, hey, look at me, I'm Blade. And I'm, like, raising up from a pool, just a regular pool. But I always have to blink my eyes because, like, chlorine or water, you know, gets in my eyes. But there's a scene where I was like, I don't think Wesley Snipes blinked as he rose from the water.
No,
I was
he, like, just, he just took it.
Yeah. So, Reinhardt sends some henchmen to take down Blade, as, you know, as a bad guy would. But Blade plows through all of them to the Crystal Methods, the name of the game, which That's is an right. early 2000s banger.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
I don't know if you guys remember the music video for the name of the game, but it's usually like this. It's this kid who has a big nose for a face.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about that one.
This came out like in 2001, maybe 2002. Yeah. So, like,
what a different time. Yeah.
What a different time.
After defeating the henchmen, let me be more specific. After suplexing the last henchman, Blade asks Reinhardt, "Can you blush?" And he slices him in fucking half. And that is it for Reinhardt. We have another epic sunglasses moment, only this time it's Whistler who tosses the sunglasses and Blade catches them without even fucking looking.
That shit was so badass.
That's another sick-ass fucking sunglass moment. Well, later on, we'll get to which one do you prefer from Blade 1 or Blade 2.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, we'll get to that at the end. But because those are two really cool sunglasses moments. I like this one because, you know, it's thrown by Whistler, but I don't know, we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Anyways. Nomak breaks into his father's chambers and kills his father out of revenge. He then even bites Nissa, not Nissan, drinking all of her blood. So looks like Nissa is about to say laters to everybody and everything. But I liked how Nissa, like, closed the doors. It's like, yeah, we're locked in, Dad, so it's just you and me and Nomak, so...
The bloodline dies with us.
Yep.
Well, now you can't leave.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, that's so good. Wow. Remind me to edit that video. Now you just can't leave. I'm going to put the fucking audio from A Bronx Tale on there.
Dude, Come Together from the Beatles? That'd be a fight right there.
For this fight scene right here that we're about to talk about.
Oh,
my God. So, anyways, Blade arrives and engages in an epic anime-style battle with Nomak. And Blade drives his sword into Nomak's weak spot. After realizing his revenge is fulfilled, he finishes the job on himself in order to end his suffering. So he's just like, all right, cool, man. I'm about to die, but I just murked my dad. Like, I got my revenge. Mm-hmm. I'm in constant pain. I'm a crackhead vampire. I'm down to just finish the job. And he just was like, all right, let's do it, man.
But hit my weak spot. It's a boss fight. Just hit the weak spot.
Like, okay, let's do good. It, man. I'm good. I'm good to go.
He has a pretty sick elbow drop in this, though.
Oh, he does. Well, that's
like a straight up HBK.
This whole fight scene is insane. There's like a CGI blade that's like being tossed around. There's a part where Blade is on the ground and like Nomak leaps into the air like 20 feet. In the air, and then like there's this anime style camera angle that looks super anime as fuck, and yeah, the elbow drop that you mentioned, it's great. Yeah, it's a badass fight scene. It's really cool.
Dig it. Mm.
And after finally defeating Nomak, Blade takes a nearly dead Nissa outside to enjoy the sunrise before she perishes away.
I remember thinking that was so sad. I was like, she just wants to see the sun.
But she gets like the female protagonist, like, ah, I'm dying. Yeah. And everyone else is like, oh shit, oh.
She dies so peacefully as she's caught on fire by the fucking sun.
She's burning slower than everybody else. Everybody, again, they just get like rocked immediately. It's amazing.
That's another pitch meeting trope right there. It's like, why does Nissa like die so beautifully and slowly? It's like, oh, it's because she's one of the main characters.
It's because she's a beautiful woman and Blade is attracted to her. That's
exactly
why.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like they never had like a on-screen kiss or anything like that, but there definitely was something right there. Like Blade's like, look, man, I don't know what happened to Karen from the first movie, man, but you know, you and I, we got something special going on, and you know,
he's like, suck my arm for life.
Ew!
God damn it! God damn it, boy.
God damn it! I quit.
That's the closest they got.
I quit.
All right, but we're not finished with this movie yet. We got one more scene. We got one more scene here. So, Blade 2 ends in London, where we are following Rush, the lucky vampire who managed to escape from Blade back in Prague from the beginning of the film. We remember him, right?
Yeah, he's like, I'll consider you a loose end.
So this horny vampire is at a peep show booth, and I like how he's getting like his napkins prepared.
It's so gross. God. So fucking gross.
He's got like paper. He's got like a little freaking napkins and paper. Tissue paper, getting ready.
Oh my god, I just remembered from the fucking beginning of the movie, they have blood cocaine in this movie.
Oh, we'll talk about that in a little bit. We're going to talk about the blood cocaine.
That's right, yeah. I forgot about that shit.
We're going to talk about the blood cocaine in just a minute. But, so this horny vampire is at a peep show, and he's at the booth. You know, there's like the little glass right there, right? So, but it's in black.
Yeah.
And as the curtains open, we don't find a stripper or, you know, a very good-looking woman. No, we find Blade inside the booth, like, but he, you know, he's dressed like Blade. He's not dressed like a stripper or anything.
That would have been so hilarious. Blade in like a maid's outfit.
You have to go like full cat, like, you know, camouflage or like incognito and dress up like one of the staff members.
He's got a whole ass wig too, but the sunglasses are still there.
That's hilarious. And it's not Blade. Her name is Jade. Oh my god. Alright, so as the curtains open, we find Blade inside the booth. And this shocks the vampire as Blade says, "What? You didn't think I forgot about you, did you?" And then Blade jams his sword through the glass and onto the vampire's skull. Cue eye against eye. The end. Roll credits. Fade
to
black.
Yeah. So going back to him being in drag, I think this is just a mix-up of Tu Huang Fu and Blade.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's hilarious.
That'd be great. Tu Huang
Fu. That is so good. They should have done that. Now I'm pissed that Del Toro did not have the balls to put Blade in drag for this final scene.
We already know Wesley Snipes is down.
Yeah, we know he'd be down. Ah, damn. I'm a little disappointed in Del Toro.
Now I
want to
watch Tu Huang Fu.
That's a just great, let me keep the glasses. That'd be hilarious. And then it was like, all right, my name's not Blade no more. It's Jade. All right, guys. So that takes care of the plot breakdown. But now we got some more info here. Let's talk about a little bit some of the production and the little behind the scenes insights and highlights of Blade 2. Alex, could you please get us into this, please, por favor?
Absolutely, Blade. Electric Del Toroloo.
Man, that's a good title. I like that title. That's a nice one.
Thank you, thank you.
So, in the glorious year of 1999, New Line and Marvel saw the success from the first Blade movie and said, fuck it, let's make a sequel. David Goyer had made plans to bring in Morbius for the sequel, but Marvel insisted on reserving Morbius for his own franchise, which we know went so well.
Oh, yeah. Has anybody still seen that movie?
No.
No,
I still haven't seen it either. I kind of want to. I think we should have a Morbius circ just for shits and giggles. I kind of want to. I don't know. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
I mean, it'll be shit talking abound, but sure.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, as a note, Morbius was actually featured in a deleted scene from the first movie. Dun dun dun. Ooh, cool.
We have. I don't know if you guys knew that. I don't know if you guys seen the clip. There's an actual like deleted scene at the very end of Blade 1 after they've already defeated Deacon Frost. Karen and Blade climb up the rooftop of that temple that they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Karen's like, so what now? I was like, all right, well, you get your cure going on, blah, 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 blah. And then Karen's like, well, what about that guy? Blade turns around, and on another building, at another rooftop, you see, like, this dude in a trench coat, long hair. He's got, like, a mask. He's got, like, a dark, like, hooded mask. Can't really see his face, and sunglasses. He kind of looked like the Winter Soldier in Captain America Civil War, but, like, with a long black trench coat. And then he's like, oh, I'll worry about him another time or something like that. So that's clearly Morbius.
Interesting.
But yeah, he was in a deleted scene. The deleted scene is on YouTube right now. So like people back then were like, oh fuck, Morbius is going to be in Blade 2. And yeah, there was no Morbius in this or in Blade Trinity. And we didn't get Morbius until the Jared Leto Renaissance recently.
The Letoissance.
Yeah. The Letoissance. Yeah. But anyways, yeah.
So, after finishing the script, Goyer compared this story to The Dirty Dozen, which is a war film about a group of commandos that go on suicide missions during World War II. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I can see it, yeah.
Okay, this part I'm excited about. So New Line offered director Stephen Norrington to return to direct Blade 2, but he declined. He turned their asses down and went on to direct the incredible movie.
Oh my god.
The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen instead.
Wow, dude.
Oh, I am so glad I got that bit.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, I am a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen apologist, and I stand by it. It's a good fucking movie.
And I am a League of Extraordinary Gentleman hater.
But you love to hate it.
Yeah, yeah. Almost not as much as I love to hate Crimson Peak, but it's around the same.
Dude, you're doing this because you know I can't get to you right now.
I know, right? I had to trigger one more time. It's instinct at this point.
You fuck.
I've only seen LXG, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, once, and that was when I was like 14 at the movie theater. Because the trailer got me. It's like, from the director of Blade. And I was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to go see this. And I knew who Sean Connery was. And I was like, oh, this movie has, like, The Invisible Man and Jekyll and Hyde. I'm like, okay, I'll go check it out. Yeah. And I remember, like, thinking it was pretty cool. Like, I liked it.
It's fun.
But I was 14.
Last time I watched it, I think it was when I had COVID last. Mm-hmm. Which I may have COVID now. We don't know.
Oh, God.
So I might have to
get the will going. Get the
will
going.
Hence why we're doing this remotely. Hence why we're recording remotely.
God, yeah. Be careful who you make out with, folks.
Oh God. Oh gosh.
It feels like I'm not careful at all.
No, I'm not careful at all.
Okay, thanks, Phil. So Goyer and producer Peter Frankfurt were fans of Guillermo del Toro. Frankfurt had first met Del Toro during the production of Mimic. Praising Del Toro, Frankfurt said, quote, "Both David Goyer and I had been fans of his since Kronos and were enthusiastic about him coming on board. When you sign on with someone like Guillermo, you're not going to tell him what the movie should look like. You're going to let him run with it," unquote.
That's what I'm fucking talking about right there. Yeah.
That's how it really should be. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Directors directing? Novel concept.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
According to good old GDT, he said that he was tired of the romantic concept of vampires being, quote, tortured Victorian heroes, and wanted vampires to be scary again.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, GDT didn't really mess with the script and stated, quote, "I wanted the movie to have a feeling of both a comic book and Japanese animation."
There it is. There it is.
"I dissected most of the dailies from the first movie. I literally grabbed about 4 boxes of tapes and one by one saw every single tape from beginning until the end until I perfectly understood where the language of the first film came from. I studied the style of the first one, and I think Norrington used a tremendous narrative style. His work is very elegant."
Damn.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So he did his research. Definitely, he watched, like, not only did he watch, like, the final, like, flick that we all saw in the public, mm-hmm. but he saw, like, dailies. He saw, when I was doing some research, he would watch, like, even deleted scenes, and he would watch just, like, stuff that didn't even make it, like, a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes footage. Like, he would just watch hours and hours of content. There's that fucking word. of Blade One, you know? Just, so it's like, he really did his homework for this one.
He really respected the tone, too, mm-hmm. of the first one.
He did.
Doing his own thing. Like,
yeah.
You can definitely tell, like, Del Toro, mm-hmm. he's a goddamn good director. God.
Yeah, he did this, and then he implemented, like, his style, like, this movie definitely had, like, some, like, cyber goth, early 2000s vibes, like
it definitely has like pseudo Matrix vibes.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember The Crow, City of Angels?
Yes.
No.
So, say what you will about that movie. That movie had a distinct look. Man, I wonder if it's from the same cinematographer.
Maybe, because you're right. It did have a
because it looked look a too. Lot like color tone, color palettes, like set design, like lighting. Very, like, camera work was very a lot like the sequel to The Crow. But damn, I should have looked into it. But I just, because I thought it just came to mind. But anyways, I'm sorry. Webster, go ahead.
No worries. So Wesley Snipes seemed like he was, in a word, enthusiastic about stepping back into Blade's shoes, saying, quote, "I love playing this role. It's fun as an actor to test your skills at doing a sequel to see if you can recreate something that you did," unquote.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he was fully on board for to do it again. Like he really loved that. Have you guys seen the interview that Wesley Snipes did as Blade?
No.
Oh my God.
He doesn't drop character.
He does not drop character while he was doing press. Like, he's like, "Some might say that I, you know, working with this director, blah 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 blah, but I can provide something that Wesley does not." And he name drops Wesley Snipes. Like, he's like, but he's talking as Blade. Like, he's already in costume and everything. And he's already in costume. He's got this, he's wearing sunglasses, but he's talking as Blade. Like, he really loved this character a lot.
Love that. Also, just to confirm, the cinematographer only did not do the second Crow movie.
Yeah, but you know, also to throw a little connection there, David S. Goyer did write The Crow City of Angels.
He did, huh? Yeah. Oh, there's the connection.
There might be some tonal similarity in the writing and narrative style.
He's also the same cinematographer for Blood In, Blood Out.
What?
Ooh. Oh, and Gummo from Harmony Korine. Holy shit.
What? Okay. Damn. All right.
Who's this fucking guy?
Blood In, Blood Out. All
yeah. Right. So, I don't know. He also went on to be the cinematographer for Black Widow.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Damn. So he's still working. All right, he's still doing his thing. All
right. Anyway, when working with Wesley Snipes, Guillermo del Toro stated, quote, "Wesley knows Blade better than David Goyer, better than me, better than anyone else involved in the franchise. He instinctively knows what the character would and wouldn't do, and every time he twists something around, something better would come out of it," unquote. Hell yeah.
Man, everybody respecting each other on the set. What's going on here? We don't usually do things like this in our podcast. It's way worse.
Go ahead. Guillermo del Toro said Wesley Snipes is Blade.
Yeah, pretty much. And just wait until Blade Trinity, because we don't get that in Blade Trinity.
I was going to say, are we even going to cover Blade Trinity?
I'm kind of down because
We might as well.
We might as well also just for the one, the only Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Yes, of course. Yeah, dude. Mm-hmm. Yes. Triple H and fangs, dude. He's banging.
He's doing something.
Behind the scenes story, it's gonna be Blade Trinity for sure. Just so you know, like, I remember the reports coming from that one. Holy shit!
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. The CGI eyes. Wesley Snipes apparently was like very difficult in that movie. He's like, I'm kind of done here.
He's like, my work here is done.
No, but he was still in character as Blade the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the crazy part. Yeah, but yeah. And it, as he would say, probably to the director of Blade Trinity, some motherfuckers are still trying to ice skate uphill.
Beautiful.
Filming for Blade 2 took place in the Czech Republic and in London. Filming wrapped up, of course, in July 2021 or 2001. 21, Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it gets
and
worse.
Blade 2 hit theaters on March 22nd, 2022.
Oh shit. Oh damn. Oh, that's a typo right there.
2002.
So I noticed that and I didn't say anything because I wanted this to happen.
All right, let's play with this idea. Can you imagine if Blade 2 came out now, or you know, in recent time, like a year ago, I guess, 2022. Let's say there never was a Blade 2 or 3 up until now. We get an old and Wesley Snipes comes back, Guillermo del Toro, with the career that he's had, you know, like Pacific Rim, everything.
Crimson
you know,
Peak.
The Shape of Water, everything.
Yeah, yeah, now wide range of movies.
Let's say they do Blade 2. Let's say they do a Blade 2 in a recent time. We get an old man, Wesley Snipes, old man Blade. Like, I'm down to kind of see that, actually.
I'm down with a very similar story, too. Yeah. If they want to do it like an anime style, I'm with it. Yeah.
And it, like, you can still go with the same story with the blood pack. Like, hey, dude, you've been doing this shit for 30 something years. You're an old man, but now, you know, there's something else lurking in the streets. You're going to train these guys.
Run a team.
Yeah. Like, Blade 2 with a 60 year old Wesley Snipes. Like, I'm down to kind of see that.
Yeah, I'm with it. Yeah. I'm with you on that one. Yeah. Mm hmm. But Blade 2 went on to be, of course, the highest-grossing film in the Blade trilogy, earning $80 million in the good old USA and $150 million worldwide. That's a fucking big old number.
Yeah.
Roger Ebert gave Blade 2 3.5 out of 4 stars, hey, stating Blade 2 is a really rather brilliant vomitorium of viscera, a comic book with dreams of becoming a textbook for mad surgeons. You motherfucking
Vomitorium of viscera.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
That's
I
the love name that too. Of my first album.
Yeah. Dude, that sounds like Roger Ebert. What the hell? That's a brilliantly well structured sentence.
I agree.
Man had a way with words.
Good analysis. Yes. And of course, over on Rotten Tomatoes, Blade 2 sits with a oddly divisive 57% on the tomato meter. And of course, though, a 68% with the audiences. So
almost 69. Almost
yeah,
there.
Yeah, almost. It could have been there. Could have been there. One more techno song. So now, of course, is the fun stuff. Let's check out some Letterboxd reviews. What have you guys have to say? Well, of course, Adam Bolt with 3.5 stars says, I will never be more at peace than watching Wesley Snipes beat people up to techno music. I agree.
I gotta go with that one too, yeah. Mm-hmm. I fucking love that.
It's comfort for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oliver Swift with 3.5 stars also says, Wesley Snipes is the coolest motherfucker to ever day walk the earth. That's a good, okay.
I love that.
Oh, okay. Ricky Bobby with 3.5 stars says, a dude snorts a line of powdered blood like 10 minutes into the movie, and that gives you a pretty good idea of what to expect for the remaining 100 minutes. 7 out of 10.
Dude, I was like, there's no fucking way. Yep. And she's like, nope, this motherfucker is snorting blood cocaine.
Mm-hmm. In this world, we got blood cocaine.
Good lord.
Oh, and of course, Santi with 4 stars says, this would be a 4.5 if it had more Donnie Yen.
Yes.
Okay. Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed.
And of course, Laya with 4.5 stars says, the entire superhero genre, I never said thank you, Blade 1 and 2. And you'll never have to.
Yes! That's my favorite.
A Batman Begins reference.
Oh.
Also David Goyer.
Oh, that's true. Hey. But that's our Letterboxd reviews. And now it's time to start talking about our feelings on this fucking movie.
All right, guys. Discussion time. Woo! Thoughts on Blade 2, please. Here's some side notes here for you, too. Does Blade 2 top the first one? Or is this a sequel like Aliens or Terminator 2, where it can equally sit on its own and also equally stand tall with the original? What do you guys think?
I would definitely say it's very much an Aliens Terminator 2 style, its own thing. It does feel like a true sequel, though. Like, it really does feel like the continuation of Blade, but I think it's stylistically different enough to really kind of be its own thing. And that's why I think Aliens and Terminator 2 are also very stylistically different than their predecessors. It has its own identity, for sure. But I love this movie. I saw it for the first time at a theater in Texas, because I used to visit Texas all the time, and my grandpa would take us to movies. Right. And we saw this, and I just remembered, like, younger me, and this is 2002, right? So I'm like a freshman, maybe sophomore. And I thought the Reapers were scary as fuck. Like, I don't know what it was, but the first time I saw it, I'm like, damn, these stakes are high? The betrayals were a little much, but, I mean, it definitely made it feel more anime. This is probably one of the closest to anime films, and I didn't realize it until seeing it in this particular run, earlier this week. But no, I love this as a sequel. This is the best Snipes, I think, portrayal of Blade. He just has that perfect balance of confidence. And, the villains, the fight scenes, everything kind of worked, and it's pretty fast, so, you know, Del Toro knocked it out of the park again. This does feel very Del Toro, but it also feels like its own thing. I'm glad we got a sequel like Blade 2, because, like the first Blade, and I said this in the previous episode, there's no comic book movie that feels like the Blade series. It really does stand on its own.
Agreed.
And this one is even stands on its own compared to the first one, so that's my thoughts.
Nice. Webster, what about you?
I absolutely agree. I think even in Aliens and Terminator 2, they do the same little recap at some point, like a little exposition recap of like what you missed in the previous movie. So, I mean, even that alone, like even though I thought it was kind of cheesy, like it fits the tone of like you can watch Blade 2 without having to see Blade 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and you still kind of get the gist. And it stands alone very strongly, in my opinion. I don't think it tops the first one, but these two are like, I wish Blade Trinity didn't exist.
Yeah.
Because these two, it's just like a duology, are fucking incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're very, very strong together. Yeah. So, I mean, I love this movie. I've seen it a bunch of times. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, same here. I think this movie came out in 2000. So, this was March 2002. I was very, very, I was like...
March 22nd, 2022, according to
Inkville. Oh, my gosh. So, I was in eighth grade when this movie came out in March 2002. So, like, for a kid... You know, a teenage boy in the early 2000s to a sequel to Blade, this movie fucks. Like, you know, at the time, you know? And it still does. I think it still holds up for sure. Like, there's, looking at it now as an adult, you know, putting my bias of, like, you know, overall excitement that I have for this character in this trilogy, I'm just like, it's still, like, there's some things here and there where I'm just like, okay, there's, like, the whole, we touched a little bit on the Whistler stuff. There's some plot holes here and there. But you can tell that like, this is still like a movie that was made with love for sure.
Yeah.
You know, when you got somebody like Del Toro behind the camera and Snipes, who was still very excited to play this character, like, dude, look at him throughout the movie. You look like he's having a good time. There's a scene where Ron Perlman points a laser gun at Snipes from across the nightclub. But then Chupa's like, hey, he's already got one on you. And then, like, Blade smiles from, like, across the freaking nightclub. Like, I was like, dude, like, stuff like that, you know? And then, like, he'll be making jokes like, ooh, so exciting, and stuff like that. And he looks like he's having a great time.
It's peak Blade for sure. Yeah.
Like, yeah, peak Blade for sure. I really love this movie. At the end of the day, I still think this is I think it's got this case where it's like a sequel could stand on its own. Like, you can watch Blade 2 and never have seen Blade 1. However, I still think Blade 1 is still my favorite one. Blade 1, especially when we touch a little bit about, like, Deacon Frost. I felt like that villain was a more personal villain. Like, dude, he was banging Blade's mom, for Christ's sakes. You know what I'm saying? I was like, it doesn't get any more personal than banging your mom, dude.
Well, also, I mean, thank you for bringing that up, because I think that the villains in Blade 1 were, like, they had, like, a sort of, I mean, for lack of a better term, like, a personable human element to them versus the Reapers in 2. Like, they're just bad. Like, they're kind of inherently bad. They always do bad stuff. Like, there's nothing really, like, other than the fact that they're, like, genetic, like the main guy was, like, made this way, and, like, he kind of had to take it out on everyone. But, like, we didn't get that until the very, very end. I feel like there was a much more, like, human element with Deacon Frost in the first one that made it, like, conflicting almost.
Like, if I'm standing in two dark alleys and I came across one dark alley is Nomak and his Reapers, the other dark alley is Deacon Frost and his crones, I think I'm a little more scared of Deacon, because, like, the Reapers are just, like, mindless, like, you know, these, you know, Frankenstein monsters, right? Except for Nomak, you know? But, like, Frost, like, he's, like, a mobster, dude.
Yeah.
This guy's a fucking gangster. Also, you know, very powerful, especially when he gets, like, Lamagra, like, you know, like, Lamagra Deacon Frost, when he's, like, fully, like, invincible. Like, that makes things even worse. So, like... I mean, I still think Blade 2 is an incredible action movie. It's got a really cool special effects. Dude, when I think of Blade 2, I think of, like, the creature effects, especially in the when they're opening up one of the Reapers, and you just see, like, this Cronenberg-esque, like, fucking body laboratory scene where they're, like, trying to analyze, like, what's inside a Reaper. And that shit's all, like, animatronics. It's, like, all practical effects. Yeah. It's all practical effects, so, like, that's one thing I really love about, you know, many things I love about this movie. But at the end of the day, Blade 2 is still, like, an incredible sequel. Like, it's fun as fuck, honestly. Like, I think, who says it? Ricky Bobby is like, dude snorts powdered blood in the first 10 minutes. That gives you a pretty good idea what to expect for the remaining 100 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know?
Well, that's an also good point. This is, like, a quick movie.
Yeah,
like it's like an hour 44 maybe. Yep. Like it's very, very quick, and it doesn't goes by very quick. It's very
there's a lot happening. Well, there's definitely a lot happening.
There's, like, I mean, we have, like, pretty much a boss fight in the first, like, 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Like and then so it feels very fast paced.
Yeah,
you know, I will say though, I do like I feel like the villains in this movie are very distinct from the first one, so it's hard for me to really pick because I like that, like, you know, Nomak is so unhinged. Mm-hmm. Like, he really is unhinged, and, like, you kind of don't know where he's going to go, and he's got a big old fucking chip on his shoulder. And it's the fact that it's not personal to Blade kind of makes him a little scary in my own way. Even if his enemies are kind of drones, you know, they are relentless, mm-hmm. which kind of makes them terrifying. Mm-hmm. But it does, the whole movie seems at, like, a big, big scale. But it's not necessarily make it better or worse than them. It's very different. It's very different. Yeah, but Deacon, of course, is like a classic fucking villain. Like, it really, really is. So I think the older movie, the first movie, has more of that almost like early Batman, like 90s kind of superhero style to it, which really distinguishes it again. It's why it's hard to pick between both of them, honestly. Mm-hmm. They both really have some big strengths that are distinct from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right, cool. I got another question for you guys right here. All right, so Guillermo del Toro and Blade 2... lean pretty heavy on the cyber goth vibes of the early 2000s, right? There's not much we know about this MCU's Blade that's currently in production, and it's finally apparently on the way, right?
I mean, isn't it still kind of like in like development hell or what?
I don't know. Oh, from what James told me the other day, apparently it's moving forward. Like, you know, as soon as the strikes are done, they're gonna go full steam ahead on this.
They should. Okay.
Yeah. So
goddamn time.
I know, the announcement of Mahershala Ali playing Blade, that was made like 5 years ago.
What?
Maybe more. Yeah. Like, dude, 2018,
I think. It was such a big fucking deal, too.
Yeah, it was a big deal. He put on, like, Mahershala Ali was at Hall H, and then, he just put on a cap, and it just said Blade. And I was like, oh, fuck! So, like, it was like, that was like a little tease saying that he's the new Blade. Which I mean,
he's not getting any younger. Like, we gotta...
Yeah, I know, we gotta hurry up. Yeah. I think he's a fantastic actor. He'd be great as Blade, but let's get the ball rolling on this.
Yeah.
So if it's let's pretend it's already full steam ahead. It's on production. It's happening, right?
Okay.
What director would you like to see take on the MCU Blade? All right, while you guys think about this, I'll go ahead and give you my answer here. I was going to say the Safdie brothers.
Ooh.
Safdie brothers give the you know, Uncut Gems. They've got something there where if they were to be given a massive, big budget, Marvel-sized budget, where they can give us like a more grounded, like kind of how Blade 1. Blade 1 was super grounded. Like if we got like a combination of action... Like, I wouldn't go as far as going, like, anime style with, like, what Del Toro did. But if the Safdie brothers were to direct something where it's, like, we have all the vampire elements, the horror elements, the action elements of what makes Blade a really cool property. If we get that, I think the Safdie brothers would have a lot to play with here. Mm-hmm, I would like to see the Safdie brothers take this on.
I have mine.
Uh-huh. Go for it.
Ryan Coogler.
Ooh.
He did Black Panther, though. He already did that, didn't he?
Yeah, but I would like to see him. Yeah. I mean, he also did Creed. Like,
true. Like, he would be able to pull it off.
But what he did with Black Panther, I think, like, would translate well to Blade. Like, I think they, like, he could make it, like, and he could play around with, like, the darker elements of it.
Yeah,
I think 100%.
Still keep it within the MCU style, too, I think. So that's good.
I mean, he's got loyalty already with the MCU. Like,
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually got two.
Ooh, okay.
I got two. So for my little like bias here, I would like to see one of the amigos have a shot at a Marvel property.
All right.
And I do That'd think cool. Alfonso Cuarón would be a great pick.
Ooh, right. Okay.
Because he already his big budget movies have been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And he already has a franchise experience with Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. But also, like, I think, you know, he's got some of the same instincts as Del Toro for sure. So we could get something that will be his own, but still respect Blade as a series. But one director that hasn't worked with Marvel at all, and I would love to see his take, and you give him dark material to work with, and he might kill it, is Bong Joon-ho.
Ooh.
Bong Joon-ho never worked with Marvel, right?
I don't think he ever would, though.
I don't think he would either. But also, like, again, Ryan Coogler was much more of an indie director, too, before Johnny did, like, Fruitvale Station and stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think it's possible to get,
I forgot about Fruitvale Station. That's a great movie.
That's a great incredibly movie. Sad movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, I mean, that's the thing. You can get so much out of somebody that does very, very different work. So, I would like to see his take, but to me, those are both really sophisticated-ass directors who work with mature properties, and Blade is a mature property, you should treat it that way.
Sure.
So, yeah, those are my boys.
What about
Martin Scorsese? No,
I was gonna say Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson would be interesting. All right, I can do Peter Jackson.
I mean, he's done horror before, not necessarily well received, but he's done it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, very interesting takes. I like this. Mm-hmm. I like all these picks right here. These are really cool.
Yeah, we got some good ones.
Nice. All right, cool. All right, got a fun question for you guys here.
Okay,
we touch a little bit on it, but. Which sunglasses moment do you prefer? Which sunglass moment do you prefer? Let's do a little quick recap. In the first one, Quinn was gonna like charge Blade, and Blade cuts his fucking head off with this wire, making Quinn's sunglasses. Well, it's actually Blade's sunglasses flying through the sky, and then we get this really close up shot of Blade catching the sunglasses. He puts on the sunglasses, camera rotates around him, very Michael Bay-ish in a way, and then he takes on the cronies. And the second one, we mentioned earlier that he falls into the pool, restoring his energy, and he takes on all of the henchmen, and then after he fights all, and then he kills off Ron Perlman, after that, it's Whistler who tosses the sunglasses, making Blade catch the sunglasses, and also in another very badass way. But which one do you guys prefer? Webster, go ahead.
Two.
I agree. Two was just like, because I did not expect two at all. Like, I was like, oh, fuck, I forgot about it. It's going right into the climax, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like thematically perfect, because Blade's got all his blood back, he's got everything good, and you just need the one thing, and now you know he's going to kick ass afterwards, and that's just the way Whistler did it.
Yeah, it's badass, and also just like the completely unrealistic throwing of one's sunglasses that far and catching it perfectly. It's just a perfect like comic book nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, the perfect catch. I agree.
Yes, that like it's again the anime thing where it's just, it has that vibe to it. It's just perfectly ridiculous. It's the right amount of silly that makes this movie great.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that, and I love that it's Whistler who throws it too. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool. It just, you know, it's kind of like a father figure to him, and they got a special bond. And I like how he just says, go kid, or something like that. It was like, go get him, kid, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he calls him kid a lot. I thought that was really cool. Damn, dude. I was actually struggling with this question, because I love both.
They're both great. Yeah.
They're both fucking awesome. But yeah, I guess I'm going to have to go with two also. Mm. I'm going to, only because of what I just touched on. The fact that it's Whistler who throws it, kind of like a small callback to the original sunglass moment from the first movie. I think this one, they just made it just a little more special only because it's like, you know, Whistler that does it. You know?
Yeah, and they've been through a lot to that point, so it's nice that they're like, we got all our shit together now,
let's go fuck him up, dude. And here, don't forget your sunglasses, dude. And he throws. Yeah, I love that shit. Yeah, so yeah. Okay, cool. All right, another fun question for you guys right here.
Okay.
We mentioned Morbius in the first one, early in the episode. If Morbius were to be in the Blade sequels... Let's pretend that, you know, David Goyer and maybe even Del Toro decide to throw in our boy Morbius into the second movie. Who should have played him?
And we're going with early 2000s, like,
vibes? Let's try to go keep it early 2000s. Yeah.
Heath Ledger. Cage.
Very different takes. Very different takes.
Oh, my God. That was so good. That was so good. That was, like, on point. Wow.
Webster, who was your choice in case the audience can't hear it?
Heath Ledger.
Oh, that's honestly, I can see it. Okay. I think that's a little better and more serious than mine.
Oh, dude, that's so good. All right, what'd you say? You said Nick Cage.
He said Nicolas Cage.
Nick Cage. Yeah. Nick Cage and Wesley Snipes in a comic book movie together fighting each other is the perfect fucking combo.
Heath Ledger would have been great.
Yeah. Heath Ledger's commitment to the bit, I think, would have made it, like, I think they would have complemented each other very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
cool. And Nicolas Cage is Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, that would have been great.
This is also, like, in the Gone in 60 Seconds era, too, so he's going to be, like, insane.
This is the early 2000s. He is absolutely insane in this era.
That's wild. Okay. I was actually going to say, a little relevant to Heath Ledger here, but I was going to say Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal went on to play a villain in the MCU.
That's true. What's his name? Mysterio.
Mysterio's
cool. And early 2000s, Jake Gyllenhaal, like, he was like, what was he doing? Prince of Persia, which he had long hair, long dark hair.
Yeah, hold on.
What was he doing a lot?
He got done with Donnie Darko.
He was already finished with Donnie Darko at that time. He was doing Bubble Boy. What was he doing in the early 2000s? I got the list. Yeah.
He was, where is his fucking filmography.
But then, of course, obviously in 05, I think, they did Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, he just did Donnie Darko in 2001. Mm-hmm. And then, it's in between Donnie Darko and The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. The Day After Tomorrow, that's right. Yeah. And he was already, like, in his 20s around that time, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's 42 now, so he would have been, I mean,
your choices were the Brokeback Mountain actors.
and Nick Cage.
And Nick Cage. Which would have been great in that movie also.
Funny.
That's
hilarious. Yeah. Also, you know, we mentioned LXG, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. What's that dude's name from the Queen of the Damned? Stuart Townsend?
Stuart Townsend, yeah.
Yeah, I think he would have been a pretty cool Morbius.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's cool.
That's another actor where I'm just like, what happened to that dude? That dude was on a roll for a while.
Yeah, that's Hollywood, baby.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Sure, choose you and spit you out, I guess.
What is Stuart Townsend up to?
is that the actual Google question?
No. Yeah.
Well, damn, according
he's 50?
Yeah, I mean, he was.
I mean, in my head, he's like perpetually, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was like pushing 30 back then, you know?
He married Charlize Theron?
Oh, what?
They were married for 8 years. What the fuck?
Oh, wow.
I did not know this.
All right. So, good answers. I dig it. Here's my final question. Blade 2, let's do it. Rate Blade 2 out of 5. You obviously don't know who you are fucking with.
Oh, shit. This movie fucks. I'm going, it's a solid 4 for me. Shoot. I'm with like a solid four.
All right.
I love it. I forgot how much I love it. Yeah, it kind of doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes, but also that kind of works in its favor sometimes too. So give me the anime portrayals, give me the cool fights, make it run fast. Yeah, I'm with this. I think this is a solid 4 for sure.
Nice. Webster, what you got?
I'm going to give it, I'm trying to remember what I rated the original, what I rated Blade.
We rated a high.
I think we did. I'm going to give this a 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly enjoyable, super awesome. Not quite a 4 for me, I don't think. But still perfectly respectable.
Absolutely.
Oh, great.
Cool. I am also going to be going 4. I don't remember what my Blade 1 was. I think I want to say 4.5, maybe even 5, because I fucking love it.
I think you did, because it was your first. It was your first episode, and you didn't realize how difficult it is to rate a movie every single week.
Yes. I think this one, perfectly enjoyable. I love the shit out of this movie. Even though, like I mentioned, being a teenager, an early teenager in the early 2000s, you know, you're listening to a lot of Limp Bizkit, you're listening to a lot of hard rock, you know?
Yeah.
And this movie was just like the perfect movie to watch in the blend of that vortex of being a teenager in the early 2000s, listening to hard rock, and, you know, you're getting exposed to gothy shit already. And
Matching your anime era, too.
Mm-hmm. That's usually around this time also. The anime, dude, the Toonami was flowing very well back then.
Yep. You're getting torrents, so you can torrent shit in Japan too with the fan subs. Like, it was a whole different 100%. Time.
Yep, 100%. So this is a very enjoyable movie. It's super comfortable to watch. It also, like I mentioned earlier, it's got a lot of heart. It's got a lot of spirit. It feels like, just by running down all the production notes that we had for this, it felt like it was made with love. You know, it was treated with respect. From Snipes to Del Toro to Goyer, it felt like this is one of those sequels where it's like, yeah, it flowed very well and no issues at all were found. Seems like, you know, the story itself, it's fun. It's got some plot holes here and there, but it's like one of those things where it's like you kind of dismiss because it's like, I don't care because this movie's about vampires and shit. You know, and
it definitely is. Yes, I agree with that.
And it's got these mutated vampires and stuff like that. So I don't care if Whistler was turned back into a human so easily, you know?
Inconvenience.
Barely an inconvenience. So,
With that point, too, it does kind of feel like the X2 X-Men United, like,
We didn't talk very much about other superhero movies that were going on in the early 2000s, too. Dude, this came out around, when Fox Marvel was doing its thing. They had, you know, some critical hits like, you know, Daredevil or whatever. But, Sony and Spider-Man was already going on the same year as the first Tobey Maguire movie. A year later, X2 X-Men United was out. This is a little bit before Kate Beckinsale's Underworld movies. I think it was two years before Van Helsing. I think Van Helsing was like 2004.
The
superhero genre is already like taken off.
I mean, we get Batman Begins in 2005.
In 2005, yep.
And the best superhero sequel in my eyes, Spider-Man 2. Just a couple
Spider-Man
years
Spider-Man 2 was 2004. Two years after Blade 2.
This is also the same era in 2003 that we got fucking Daredevil.
You know what? They can't all be bangers. You're right.
that's what I said. That's what, like, it was like Marvel's hitting some critical hits and misses here and there, too. It's not like a straight shot, you know, hits like in the 2010s to that leads up to Infinity War and stuff like that, right? So Marvel is still playing around with these things, but it started in 98 with Blade 1, baby.
I mean, we have the 2003 Hulk movie.
Oh, yeah, that also, too, was also kind of a...
It was a mixed bag,
I didn't like that one very much.
Even
when I was a kid, I was like, I'm not feeling this.
Constantine.
Hey, there you go.
I think it was like 2005. So the superhero genre is already taken, but I gotta come back to that Letterboxd review where... Leah, I think, says the entire superhero genre. I never said thank you. Blade 1 and 2. And you'll never have to.
Yep. Precisely.
I love it.
I will say, because we said that we would bring it up, but I'm just going to say it now to end on a spicy note. Hellboy 2 is Guillermo del Toro's weakest movie. Thank you.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't seen Hellboy 2.
I have.
So I haven't.
I really love like the special effects. It's like probably the most over-the-top Del Toro-ness. You know, like, when Michael Bay's people say... You know when somebody says, oh, he went full Michael Bay. Or he went full Tim Burton. Like, Hellboy 2, he went full GDT. You know what I'm saying? Like, with the creatures and the, you know, the special effects and the action.
And that's not to say that, like, I don't love the movie. I just think it's, like... For me, Guillermo del Toro can do literally no wrong.
I'm looking at his like filmography right now. I'm like, there's really not a lot of misses here.
No,
like there's really just not. Isn't. Even the ones I haven't seen, I'm like, yeah, I want to watch that though. Like, I just want to watch it.
Like, I loved The Shape of Water. Nightmare Alley was like definitely.
Nightmare Alley was great.
It was definitely like him stretching his style a little bit, but I still thought it was fucking incredible.
And then even Mimic is like a good take on like it's gross. Like, I don't know, there's something about it that's kind of off-putting, but it's kind of intended with the style of movie that it is. It's a very interesting studio movie that I'm glad, like, nobody else would make besides Del Toro, so, you know?
But, yeah, I just wanted to end on that spicy note because I will be vindicated.
Now I feel like watching Hellboy after this. Thanks.
I was watching Hellboy in my office because I just needed, like, background noise, and I was just like, wow, this movie is so cheesy. I didn't remember, as a kid, I remember thinking, like, oh man, Hellboy's so fucking scary. And I'm like, he is an emo little bitch.
Damn, Blade 2 and Hellboy, though. And then he pops in with Pan's Labyrinth. What a fucking career, man.
Yeah. No, he's.
That's a streak right there.
I love Guillermo del Toro so much.
And then it seems like his studio films, like, it seems like he's, like,
one of those directors that where the studio lets him do whatever the fuck he wants. Like, just like how the producer said, like, yeah, you got Guillermo in there, you let him fucking direct the movie. You don't tell him how the movie should look like, you know? Well,
it's just, like, his vibe. Like, he has such this, like, he is so, like, he seems like a great guy to talk to, but I feel like also the vibes he puts out where he, like, he knows what he's doing and he's not going to let someone tell him what to do.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I dig that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's enough about that. Any final closing comments on Blade 2?
Watch Blade 1 and 2, baby.
Yeah, they're fucking beautiful.
Yeah. Wake up in the morning and throw on Eye Against Eye from Massive Attack featuring
There you go.
Incredible. All right, on that note, guys, that's it for this week. That was Blade 2 from 2002. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us next week. Fwen?
Oh, my God, we're covering a lot. So we're going to hit a classic, but it's going to be a very, very unconventional episode because it's going to be about adaptations because this movie is really influential, like very influential. So we're going to see how far-reaching that good old Hitchcock train goes. So that's what I'll leave it at that. It's a Hitchcock movie. But, you
beautiful.
Know.
Ooh, beautiful. Yeah. And then in the meantime, if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcasting shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod. We are most active on Instagram, and you can find us there at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. I'm sorry, it's X now. I keep forgetting.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And you can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo.
Hell yeah, dude.
Hell yeah, dude. you can also see what else we are offering here at the Horrible People's Network on Instagram at HORRORBLE People's Network. We have a bunch of cool shit going on. Definitely check it out. And also, I don't think we even mentioned it yet, but we're in September. We are ramping up the spooky season. We are so fucking excited.
Oh yeah.
We got a lot of shit,
baby. Yeah. LFG.
Let's go. Let's see. I think that's it. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And maybe if you get the option, snort some blood cocaine today.
Yeah, and don't try to ice skate uphill. That's not a good idea.
No. Bye.
Laters.